Hello, full-bodied family. Thank you all so much for tuning in to another episode of the Full-Bodied Crime Podcast. As always, my name's Kayla, and as promised in the last episode, this has nothing to do with serial killers, and I did end up going with a disappearance. I apologize that it is released a tad later than I anticipated, but one of my dear friends called me up for dinner, so I got to spend some time with the amazing Tori Johnson, who's now a new listener on this podcast. So, hey, Tori, thanks for a great date night, my sweet friend. And also, thank you so much to all of you for listening so far. I've only told my mom and a few of my best friends about this podcast. And from like a personal Instagram or Facebook page, I haven't broadcasted it at all for the rest of the general public. So, you guys have just been such a strong foundation and the OG members of the Full Bodied family. And it's been doing so well. So I appreciate each and every single one of you listeners and downloaders, reviewers and subscribers. You guys know who you are and you're all truly the best. So let's get into this episode's crime, or I guess you can say today's mystery. And before I get too far into it, I do want to give credit where it's deserved, and that's to the Investigation Discovery Disappeared show on the last episode of season 4 called Innocence Lost. So, on this episode, we will be discussing the mysterious disappearance of Jamie Michelle Fraley. Jamie Fraley was just 22 years old when she seemingly vanished into thin air on April 8, 2008. To provide a background on Jamie, she was a beautiful, blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl who seemed to overcome all the obstacles life had thrown at her. From the very moment she entered this world, Jamie experienced numerous difficulties. She was born on March 5th, 1986 in Gastonia, North Carolina, but at birth she was clinically dead and was completely unresponsive and had to have immediate CPR performed. But luckily, hospital staff was able to revive Jamie. However, throughout her life, she always encountered issues related to her birthing experience. Now, her family describes her as someone who always beat the odds because she initially wasn't even supposed to live more than a few days, which she did, and then she wasn't supposed to live past a year, which she did, and then 3 years, which she lived past that, and so on and so forth. She just kept breaking through these milestones one by one. But even in infancy, she wanted to show the world that she was a fighter, which she absolutely was. But unfortunately, Jamie did experience some additional hardships throughout her life. She did have some mild developmental delays associated with her birth, and additionally, Jamie was a small 4'9", and she always found it difficult to gain weight, and she also suffered from anxiety and bipolar disorder. Her series of complications made it difficult for Jamie to be a normal teenager, and she wasn't able to do typical teenage things like getting a driver's license or graduating high school. However, regardless of any complications, Jamie was absolutely adored by her family and friends. Per a Reddit article I found, her loved ones described her as, quote, an intelligent, sweet, and feisty young woman. And this article also discusses how Jamie attended classes to complete her GED, and then she had dreams of pursuing a career as a substance abuse counselor. The way Jamie discovered this career and found herself wanting to become a substance abuse counselor is that she was a routine churchgoer, and at the church she attended, there was a program that helped addicts. And although Jamie herself wasn't an addict, one of her best friends was, so she started attending this Friday night service with her friend and was completely enlightened and knew that this was the career for her. Once she began getting her life on track and directing her life towards accomplishing her dreams, Jamie then moved into her own apartment in the year 2006. Shortly after moving into her new place and really discovering who she was as a person, Jamie also fell in love with the son of her apartment complex's maintenance man. Her new love interest was named Ricky Simmons Jr., and Ricky did have somewhat of a troubled past. He had previously served time for car theft and drug charges, but Jamie was still absolutely obsessed with him. And yes, her family was somewhat concerned over, you know, his run-ins with law enforcement, but this didn't stop Jamie at all from falling completely head over heels in love with Ricky Simmons Jr. Within a short period of time, the passionate couple got engaged, and Jamie even changed her MySpace name to Mrs. Simmons. Seemingly, she could not wait to marry Ricky. But on January 4th, 2007, Ricky began a 15-month jail sentence for larceny. And although Jamie was upset, her emotions weren't centered towards being upset over his crime. She was more upset that she couldn't physically be with the man she loved every day. But amidst Ricky's jail sentence, Jamie wrote him a letter every single day. Y'all, I was young once, and my boyfriend at the time was long distance, so I tried to write him a letter every single day to, like, be cute or whatever. But I think I stopped after 6 days because it's a lot of work and dedication. So Jamie must have been madly in love to write him a letter every single day and attempt to do it for a full 15 months. But while Ricky was in jail, Jamie used the time to continue working on herself, and she finished her GED and spent time with her loved ones. And an ironic and rather chilling piece of information I found off of the Reddit article is that Jamie even managed a MySpace page dedicated to people who had gone missing and disappeared. So per the Investigation Discovery Disappeared episode, Jamie's main source of revenue was a Social Security supplemented income. And through this program that Jamie was in, she was assigned by a provider or to a provider that basically helped somewhat of a life skills or set a life skills foundation for her, where she like learned how to pay her bills, maintain a bank account, schedule and go to appointments, etc. Side note, I seriously think there needs to be a life skills course in high school, and people need to be taught these things. They need to be taught the value of money, how to establish credit, the importance of credit scores. I was fortunate enough to have an amazing mom who set a good foundation for me, but so many people don't have guidance, and it's truly upsetting because the things you do in your early 20s or even your teens will affect you in your 30s and so on. All I'm saying is your credit score is very important. Debt is dumb, and don't go into debt trying to impress other people. Okay, sorry guys, my lecture is over, but reverting back to wanting to be a psychiatrist, so many people have anxiety, and not knowing how to do basic life skills can contribute very negatively towards anxiety, so it's one thing I'm a little bit passionate about. But, okay, back to the disappearance. So, during the time Ricky Jr. was in jail, Jamie was writing him the daily letters, and she also filled the void of missing him by spending time with his father, Ricky Simmons Sr., and his girlfriend, Kim Spranger. So Ricky Simmons Sr. and Kim lived in the same apartment complex as Jamie, so she would often find herself going over to their apartment and spending time together, cooking dinner and visiting. Ricky Sr. also helped Jamie with numerous errands because Jamie didn't have a car nor a driver's license, so he would drive her around town, and Jamie found comfort in knowing that she had such a strong relationship with her future father-in-law. Her friends do describe her as having become extremely dependent on Rick Sr., and just from the energy I was reading from her friend who was discussing their relationship from the ID Disappeared episode, it does seem that there were maybe concerns about how dependent Jamie had become on Rick Sr., but nonetheless, Jamie was completely trusting in him because, like I mentioned previously, Rick Sr. was her future father-in-law, so it would be somewhat natural to look at this person as a father figure and someone you feel very comfortable with. So now we get to April 8th, 2008, and Jamie wakes up that morning with severe abdominal pain, and she initially thinks that she'll be able to manage this pain at home, but her pain continues to worsen as the day progresses. So Jamie then calls her provider, that person who's assigned to help her with the life skills and helps drive her to appointments and such. But so she calls this provider to ask if she can take her to the emergency room to figure out the etiology of her abdominal pain. So after the arrival to the ER, Jamie is treated for her pain and eventually diagnosed with a stomach flu and discharged home. They had sent Jamie home with a prescription that needed to be filled, but after a short time of being back home, Jamie's pain returns. She did call a family member during her time back home and just felt really unsure about the hospital's diagnosis. I like to think that they ran tests to rule out, you know, emergent abdominal pain-associated diagnoses, but who knows, to be honest. I've worked with hundreds of medical providers at this point, and they all practice medicine completely differently. So it is vague on how extensive her workup actually was to finally reach the diagnosis of the stomach flu. But don't forget, you guys, you are your biggest advocate. And if something isn't right and your body's sending you warning signals, you know what you're feeling. So don't ever feel like the medical provider is always right, because it's your body and you know better than anyone if something is wrong. But regardless, Jamie doesn't feel like the stomach flu is the correct diagnosis, but she goes back home and lies in bed and tries to sleep off the rest of her illness, but her pain continues to get worse and worse and worse upon returning home. Now, rewinding to before this April 8th day, Ricky Sr. and his girlfriend Kim Springer had broken up, but Jamie still maintained a close relationship with both of them. And on this April 8th day, Jamie was supposed to take care of Kim's dog, so even amidst her excruciating abdominal pain, Jamie gathers the energy she had to care for Kim's dog. So basically, Kim arrives to drop the dog off and returns a few hours later in the early afternoon to pick up the dog. And when Kim Springer returns back, she sees that Jamie is still not doing well, and she's lying in bed suffering from this terrible pain and discomfort. So she tells Jamie that, hey, I'll at least go drop off the prescription that had previously been prescribed to her from the ER that day. So Jamie's super grateful and appreciates this gesture from Kim. So Kim leaves and drops off this prescription off at a nearby drugstore, but just a little foreshadowing event. I mean, the prescription never does get picked up from Jamie. So as the night continues, Jamie's pain is once again completely unbearable, so she calls her future father-in-law, Ricky Sr., and asks him to take her back to the emergency department. But unfortunately, during this visit, the wait time was almost 4 hours, and Jamie was so uncomfortable that she didn't want to wait and thought maybe just somehow she could manage her pain at home. Now, Ricky Sr. had only dropped Jamie off, and he didn't sit and wait for her to be done, so she calls him for a ride to pick her up, but he doesn't answer his cell phone. And after a failed attempt to reach Ricky Sr. again, Jamie called another friend to pick her up, who eventually did bring her home. So Jamie finally gets home, and her mother calls her around midnight, and she's still super sick, and she still has the abdominal pain. She's vomiting. Like, overall, she's just completely not feeling well. And her mother, Kim Fraley, offers to come grab Jamie and says that she'll take care of her at her house. But Jamie basically says something along the lines of, no, Mom, it's okay. I have a super big appointment tomorrow morning at the Social Security office that I can't miss, and I'm just going to go to bed, try to sleep it off, and hope that I'll feel better in the morning. So Jamie and her mom hang up the phone, and her mother had no idea that this would be the last verbal contact she would ever have with her daughter. So the next morning on April 9th, no one had heard from Jamie, but at this point, their thoughts are more so in a no news is good news place, because if Jamie wasn't calling them that morning, then she must have felt better and went to her appointment without any more complications. Now, it was unfortunately not until the next day on April 10th when Jamie's provider called Jamie's mom, Kim, and basically said that Jamie had missed her appointment, that she went to Jamie's apartment as scheduled on the morning of the 9th, so the day before, but Jamie never answered the door. So her mother is like, what do you mean that Jamie missed her appointment and isn't answering the door? I talked to her 2 nights ago, nearly right before the appointment the next morning, and I'm just finding out that she didn't go, nor is she not answering the door. Like, why on earth did you wait a full day to call and tell me this? So Kim Fraley knows something just isn't right, so she immediately gets law enforcement involved, and a deputy is dispatched to Jamie's apartment. Now, at this point, as in numerous cases before, nothing really seems abnormal, and Jamie is just a 22-year-old. She's an adult. She's not necessarily needing to be home or calling her mother and so on. She's an adult, and since nothing looks significantly disturbed at the house, law enforcement kind of leaned towards, well, she's an adult, she's bipolar, she's currently wanting to distance herself, maybe give it a few days, and I'm sure everything's going to be okay, because to officers, her well welfare check also showed no signs of a struggle, and they presumed wherever Jamie had gone, she had gone willingly. There was no signs of forced entry, no indication of the struggle. There was really nothing immediately alarming to investigators. But members of Jamie's family weren't taking this for an answer, and they knew something was seriously wrong. So her mother and other family members go back to Jamie's apartment, and they are immediately alarmed by what they see. And upon initially walking in, they see her keys and purse, which is a fairly large red flag. I mean, at times Jamie would get up and walk outside just to take her cell phone, but if she was going to be gone for a large amount of time, she wouldn't leave the house without her keys or her purse. They then make their way to the back of the apartment where they see the severity of how sick Jamie was on the 8th. I mean, there was vomit and just clear obvious signs that Jamie was extremely ill a few nights before. So one more thing her family noticed before leaving her apartment was that Jamie basically only had two pairs of shoes that she routinely wore, which was one, a pair of flip-flops, and two, a pair of sneakers. And the sneakers were in the apartment, but what was abnormal about this is that the shoelaces were missing out of the shoes. So at this point, her family and friends are extremely concerned. They have her purse and keys. She was clearly extensively vomiting throughout the night, and to top it off, the shoelaces are gone out of the one pair of sneakers that she frequently wears. So her mother knows something is extremely wrong at this point, and she was adamant with law enforcement, like, to take action in figuring out where her daughter was. And Kim Fraley calls the police department again, and an officer went back to the apartment with her aunt. And once again, police basically say she's over 18. If she wants to go missing, she can go missing. I actually previously asked a law enforcement officer this question, and I asked him specifically, why is every missing person's case not immediately treated as a priority? And he basically told me that they get such a large amount of calls per day about missing people, and there just absolutely is not enough resources to investigate every single call that they get, especially on top of the other numerous crimes that are committed throughout the day. He also mentioned that I think more than 95% of people return within 24 hours, and then the remainder seem to return after 48 hours or 72. And so this is a large but, you know, not very populated county where he works. So I just wanted to share this little side note because I never really understood until hearing that why every single missing person's case isn't basically treated as a hugely emergent situation. And I know for families, it's absolutely agonizing trying to get law enforcement to understand the magnitude of the situation, and I realize it's so frustrating, but this did help me understand why they specifically handle missing persons cases in the manner that they do. But Jamie's family was obviously upset at this point. I mean, law enforcement isn't offering much help, and they're desperate to find Jamie. And then also reverting back to Jamie's history of bipolar disorder, she often didn't take her medication. So what they're adding up in their mind at this time is that Jamie's ill, Jamie's not taking her bipolar medication as prescribed, and she didn't show up to a very important appointment that she had over 24 hours before. So her mother and aunt exit the apartment again, and they're now calling Jamie's cell phone nonstop, and all their efforts are seemingly unsuccessful because they're getting nothing and are calling over and over again. But after what I'm sure felt like the 100th phone call, someone finally answers. But to their even greater concern, it's not Jamie who's on the other line. So her family's been calling and calling and calling when the phone is finally answered, but it's a male's voice on the other line. And basically what had happened was a man was working on a nearby telephone line doing some sort of cable or electrical work, and he heard a phone ringing on the ground, so he goes down and picks it up, and he explains to the family the circumstances that the phone was basically just left on the side of a road, and that he had no ties to Jamie, he didn't know where she was, the only help that he could offer was answering the phone that was on the side of the road. So This news absolutely crushes her mother, and they're now in sheer panic at this point because they know something horrible has happened. This is no longer Jamie just having some sort of, you know, manic bipolar episode, but that something more sinister and dangerous has happened to Jamie, because her friends and family knew that Jamie was never without her cell phone. Yes, the purse and keys were left at the apartment, and that's suspicious, but at least her cell phone wasn't gone, because Jamie always, always had her cell phone on her. So now finding the phone provided even more evidence that Jamie was in trouble. And one of the reasons she always had her phone on her was so that her boyfriend, Ricky Simmons Jr., could call her from jail. So basically, Jamie would never willingly completely be isolated without her cell phone. So an officer goes to investigate the area where the phone was found, and at this point, law enforcement is becoming aware that this isn't a typical runaway or voluntary disappearance situation. So they begin to organize searches around where the phone was located and around her apartment complex. And at this time, they also begin conducting interviews of people that were close to Jamie, as well as neighbors and acquaintances. As people are getting interviewed and news of Jamie's disappearance begins circling around Gastonia, North Carolina, certain red flags are routinely being brought to investigators' attention. And the main red flag was people's concern over how close the relationship was between Jamie and her boyfriend's dad, Rick Sr. Mind you, Jamie sought comfort in Rick Sr. as her boyfriend Rick Jr. was in jail, and he did only live a mere two apartments over from Jamie, so it was very, very easy for them to keep a close relationship. However, numerous people told detectives that they had an abnormally close relationship, and that Rick Sr. almost seemed to be obsessed with Jamie, and he would make inappropriate, sexually motivated remarks to her and comment on her skirt or how good she looked. Or later it was even uncovered that it was a large reason why Rick Sr. and Kim Springer broke up, because she felt uncomfortable with how much attention Rick Sr. wanted to give to Jamie. So investigators know that Rick Sr. is someone they definitely need to question immediately, so they bring him in for an interview, and basically the detective on the Disappeared episode describes him as someone that's manipulative and cold, but Rick Sr. was cooperative and forthcoming with information, even though he did refuse to take a lie detector test, but they basically have nothing to hold him on and eventually let him go. But one of the investigators still wanted to look into Rick Sr., and he actually uncovers Rick's very, very long history of run-ins with law enforcement, which initially he was like, okay, drug charges, larceny, burglaries, other petty crimes, you know, whatever. But then he sees that Rick Simmons Sr. had actually committed a murder. So after digging into more details about this murder, detectives discovered that Rick Sr. had served time for manslaughter after strangling an ex-girlfriend. He had served only 6 years and was eventually released for good behavior, which I think we can all agree that 6 years is ridiculous for taking someone's life, because strangulation doesn't sound too self-defense-y to me, or however the charges were reduced from murder to manslaughter. But anyway, after investigators see this, they're absolutely shocked, and their interest in Rick Sr. grows. Now, Rick Sr. had a long-standing history with drugs, and a number of his crimes were related to him, you know, acquiring some type of item that he could sell in order to get money for drugs, you know, usually stealing the item. But Jamie didn't tell her family any of this. So when they found out the man who had been spending so much time with Jamie was pretty involved with law enforcement in a not good way, and he was also a drug addict and previously served time for manslaughter after murdering someone, I mean, Jamie's family was in complete shock when they discovered who Rick Sr. really was. Now, she did tell one of her cousins a little over 7 months before her disappearance about Rick Sr.'s past, and on the Disappeared episode, her cousin basically says that Jamie was somewhat in disbelief over Rick Sr.'s past, and she really didn't want to believe that the man she had spent so much time with and trusted so much had this extensive and pretty horrific record. And Jamie's mom basically describes her as someone who always thought people could change for the better, and to basically always give someone the benefit of the doubt, so That's exactly what Jamie did, and she turned a cheek to Rick Sr.'s past and continued to trust him and continued to be fairly dependent on him. So investigators do also touch on the fact that Rick Sr. did have some sort of magnetic draw towards him that always caught the attention of women, and he knew how to manipulate people, specifically women, to becoming interested in him, and he essentially felt like he had control over women in his life. Also, don't forget that Jamie's life mission was to become a substance abuse counselor, and she saw Rick as someone she needed to help overcome his drug addiction. But unfortunately, Rick Sr. hadn't reached that point where he wanted to be done with drugs, so Jamie almost felt helpless in this sense because all she wanted to do was help him, but he basically was just in a state where he didn't want to be helped at all. Now, at this point in the investigation, Jamie had been missing for 3 days, and there had been no financial activity on any of her accounts, and she hadn't been on her bipolar medication. No one's heard from her, seen her, talked to her. So her family is just sick with fear, and they're desperate to find Jamie. Luckily, at this point, police obtained her cell phone records, which did give detectives another lead in the investigation. Unfortunately, due to the way her cell phone was discovered, too many people had handled the phone, so they were unable to obtain any fingerprints. But her cell phone records did show that the last time Jamie's phone was used was on, the April 9th morning at about 1:30 in the morning. And she was on the phone with her friend who lived in Albemarle. I know I'm butchering that North Carolina name. I'm so sorry, you guys. Albemarle. I don't know. Albemarle, which is a little over an hour away from Gastonia, where Jamie had lived. But this friend provided a new detail and said that Jamie was waiting to be picked up by someone in a truck, and this was Jamie's very last known conversation. So I did see some articles where it referred to like this whole late night pickup being another trip to the ER, so whoever drove this truck was another ride to the emergency room for this abdominal pain. But you know, if you're linking it back to finding the purse and the keys and the wallet in the apartment, I mean, one of the main things in the ER you need is an ID. A lot of times there's a copay, so you need your wallet. So to me, it just doesn't sound fitting that if she were to be getting a ride to the ER late at night from whoever this person was that was in a truck, that she wouldn't think to take her wallet. So anyway, that's just my thought, but so investigators are trying to brainstorm who in Jamie's life has a truck or who could have been picking her up at this hour, especially since she had the flu and wasn't feeling well. So they were unsure of what the cause of this late night ride even was, and investigators are aware that Rick Sr. does drive a van, so they're questioning whether this was the truck that Jamie was referring to or if she was planning on someone else picking her up that evening. So at this time, yes, the fact that Jamie was planning on getting a ride from someone with a truck was a new lead, but investigators really didn't have any more information regarding this lead, and basically, it really doesn't end up going anywhere. What also ends up not looking very good for Rick Sr. is that about 2.5 miles away from him in Jamie's apartment complex, and a little over a mile from where Jamie's phone was found, investigators found a trash bag. And after further investigating the contents of this trash bag, they discovered that it belonged to none other than Rick Sr. And the reason Rick he gave to investigators as to why the trash bag was dumped on the side of the road was that he apparently needed to fix a spare tire, and so he discarded the trash in order to reach his spare tire. So, which kind of makes no sense to me. Pet peeve, you guys, is littering. So, like, please don't litter. Even if you have a spare tire, like, don't do it. Just think about the dolphins and all, you know, the world. But anyway, the contents inside of this trash bag are not discussed, but at this point, Rick Sr. is the main person of interest in the case, and investigators feel like he knows something about the whereabouts of Jamie and is just not coming forth with all the information. So 3 weeks after Jamie goes missing, Rick Jr. is released from jail, and he is completely heartbroken over his missing fiance. I imagine that this had to be a horrific nightmare for him. I know many men feel very protective over their significant others, so just knowing you weren't in a position where you could have prevented this or protected her, I mean, that would have been so upsetting. And Jamie's aunt reported that Ricky Jr. was actually out searching for Jamie daily with absolutely no luck. And to top that off, I mean, Rick Jr.'s dad was the main suspect in the case, which makes the situation that much worse. Just being in a position where the love of your life is missing and your own father, your own kin, is the lead person of interest in the case, I mean, that has to be so extremely difficult. So the father and son relationship progressively began deteriorating from that point on. But I mean, I can't blame Ricky Jr. for not wanting to have a relationship with his father at this time. If any of my family members were suspected to have harmed my significant other, I'd be very untrusting and absolutely devastated. So I can only imagine, but as mentioned, investigators are super interested in Rick Sr. at this point, and they decided to begin tracking his movements because maybe it would lead them to a clue about Jamie or maybe even to Jamie herself. So the detectives obtain a warrant, which lets them begin tracking Rick, and so they do so for approximately 1 month. But what they discover instead is that he frequently drove by his ex-girlfriend Kim Springer's apartment complex and other areas near her residence. And often he frequented areas associated with Kim, so he made that cross, you know, that boundary line from like crazy ex to basically complete stalker. So law enforcement officers notify Kim of this and they advise her to get a restraining order, which luckily Kim immediately does. One of Jamie's family members speculates that Rick had actually been stalking Kim because she possibly knew something about the whereabouts of Jamie, and Rick was either watching her to make sure she was keeping quiet or plotting to kill her. So Kim gets a restraining order, and about a month after taking out this restraining order, something completely unexpected happens and a huge curveball is thrown into the investigation. At this point, Jamie's been missing for almost exactly 2 months, and it's now June 9th when this event occurs. So Kim's driving around town, simply running errands, and everything seems fairly normal. Nothing's out of the ordinary until she notices something. Kim begins noticing an abnormal smell, and this just isn't your typical someone hit a dead animal on the side of the road smell. I mean, something in her car smells really, really bad. So she goes home, and throughout the weekend, she doesn't understand what in the world is making her car smell the way it is. And a few days later, she decides to see if the smell's coming from the trunk. And this is when she discovers what that horrifying smell was. In her trunk, the smell was that of the decomposing and decaying body of Rick Simmons Sr. Investigators presume that 2 days prior, an intoxicated and high Rick Sr. entered the trunk of Kim Springer's car, possibly in an attempt to kill her because he did have a knife with him, and in the midst of this intoxicated state, he accidentally locked himself in the trunk and eventually died from hyperthermia, which is basically heat stroke. Once Jamie's family found out about Rick Sr.'s death, they were absolutely devastated. Now, mind you, they weren't devastated over him passing, but they were devastated because now every piece of information that Rick Sr. had about the whereabouts of Jamie Fraley died with him, and investigators would never be able to discover what he knew about Jamie's disappearance. Even after Rick Sr.'s death, investigators still looked tirelessly for Jamie Fraley, but had absolutely no luck and no new clues as to where Jamie is. Rick Jr. was not only now mourning the disappearance of his fiance, but now the death of his father. And regardless of his relationship with his father at the time of his death, losing a parent is never, ever easy. Jamie's case is still currently open, and there is a Facebook group page titled Jamie Michelle Fraley - Missing. And there are routine posts that state, quote, Jamie Fraley went missing on April 8th, 2008 from Gastonia, North Carolina. If you have any information, please call 911 or 1-704-866-3320 or the FBI at 1-704-672-6100. If you or anyone you know has any information on the whereabouts of Jamie Michelle Fraley, please reach out to someone because someone always has to know something. Jamie's memory is held alive by her friends and family, and I extend my greatest prayers, love, and optimism to the Fraley family. If you watch the documentary, her family is still so upset today over the missing piece of their life, and I just truly hope they get the answers that they need in the near future regarding the whereabouts of Jamie Michelle Fraley. Well, my friends, this is the conclusion of the 6th episode of the Full Body Crime Podcast. Don't forget to check out pictures associated with this crime at our Instagram page, FB_crime, and check us out on Twitter at Full Body Crime, Facebook and YouTube, Full-Bodied Crime, and go visit our website, full-bodycrime.com, where you can view all the additional sources for this case. And thank you so much for listening to this episode, and please, please go review our podcast wherever you listen to it and subscribe so you can be the first one to know when there's a new episode. Really quick on Stitcher, I keep trying to get on there. I can't figure it out. So if you do listen on Stitcher, I apologize. But we are on Apple, we're on Google, we're on Spotify. You know, there's a lot of other places, iHeartRadio, a few different places where you can check us out. So I adore all of you and hope you all have the most beautiful and blessed day. I will see you soon. Bye-bye.